An ethical non-monogamous relationship, or ENM, is not that much different from a monogamous one. In this B-side episode, Drew O'Bannon, founder of sex education platform Now Open PH, talks to Business World reporter Luisa Maria Jacinta C. Hawkson about ENM in the Philippines.
All right, let's dive right in. Great to have you here. First off, especially for our listeners who may not be so familiar with ENM, can you walk us through? I personally understand that ENM is sort of an umbrella term for many ways to practice it. Can you walk us through?
So I think most people are familiar with the term polyamory. That's the term that especially most Filipinos are aware of when referencing non-monogamous relationships. But you're right, non-ethical non-monogamy is the umbrella term, which includes polyamory, but it's only one way of doing it. So polyamory is when you have multiple committed relationships, while ethical non-monogamy is just, as the name implies, not monogamy. So there's many other ways that don't involve having multiple relationships. For example, open relationships. That's probably another term people are familiar with. Mm-hmm. That's when you are allowed to have other sexual relationships. While polyamory is more, you know, you can also have romantic relationships. There's also swinging or couple swapping, where usually two couples come together and either exchange partners or date each other. Basically, there's this, if you can think of it and it's not monogamous, there's like a million different ways to do it.
With that, could you sort of describe how is ENM practiced? What's the ethics behind? I think I wanted to put emphasis on the ethical behind ENM. How different is it from a regular monogamous relationship, if there are any differences at all?
Well, the longer I do this, I think the more I see that there's really not that big of a difference between what makes a monogamous relationship ethical versus what makes a non-monogamous relationship ethical. Yeah. There's actually a movement now to just call it non-monogamy, you know?
Oh, because like, it should be implied that it is ethical, right?
Yeah. Right? And yeah, we don't pressure, like, we don't ask monogamous people, are you doing it ethically? You know, we also already have a word for non-ethical non-monogamy, which is just like cheating. You know, there's already a word for it. We don't need to stress the ethicalness of it. But the ethics behind ENM, I think the major difference is obviously there's like more people involved, which some people would say requires more communication. But again, the longer I do this, the more I'm like, maybe monogamous people just don't communicate as much because there are a lot of things that are taken as for granted. They're taken as default. There's a lot of unspoken rules when it comes to monogamy. But with ethical non-monogamy or just non-monogamy, there's really no rule. So it's a free, it's sort of like a free for all in the sense that you get to decide what that looks like. So obviously, if you want to be ethical about that, you need to communicate with everyone involved. You need to be honest. You need to be transparent. You need to have integrity. But again, these are just the same things that make monogamous relationships work. It's just that with non-monogamy, everything has to be put on the table, brought to light, or else you're just lying and cheating. So that's really like the main thing about it that makes it very, very different from monogamy. But when you're asking how it's practiced, again, as there's like so many different ways to do it. Some people practice, for example, parallel non-monogamy, which is like you're dating multiple people, but those people don't necessarily hang out or meet up. Then there's kitchen table polyamory, where the people that you're dating are friends. They're good enough friends that they can have coffee at the kitchen table. And then there's somewhere that's kind of in between, which we call garden party polyamory, where maybe you're not like hanging out for coffee, but if there's a birthday or a party of some sort, then everyone's invited. You know, you get along that being in a party with everyone that you're dating is not awkward. So there's a variety of ways to practice this. But the main point is that everyone is informed, everyone consents, and hopefully everyone is satisfied.
With that, I wanted to go into maybe, I'm sure you've had to discuss this many times. What are some of the biggest misconceptions about ENM? I think maybe a knee-jerk reaction, especially in a country like the Philippines, it's regarded as maybe even like a sort of like a spectacle because it's so uncommon. So what are some of the myths that you would want to debunk about E&M?
Oh, there's so many. The number one myth is that people who practice non-monogamy don't know how to commit. In fact, I would say that it's so wrong that people who practice non-monogamy are overachievers in commitment. Maybe we commit too much. Just kidding. But I mean, like, there's that desire to commit to more than one person, or the desire to nurture more than one romantic or sexual relationship. And that really just shows that it's not a fear of commitment that's the issue. It's just like there's a very different understanding of what commitment looks like, where commitment doesn't really need to involve exclusivity. Like, that's what a lot of people hear, and generally monogamous societies think when they hear commitment, right? I don't want to commit to you. I still want to see my options. Whereas in non-monogamy, you can see your options and commit at the same time. So it allows for more flexibility in what commitment means. Other big misconceptions about E&M is that it's all about sex. Obviously, sex happens sometimes. Possibly more so than in a monogamous relationship, maybe, but not always. You know, there are a lot of asexuals who are polyamorous. There are people who maybe just aren't into sex, or, you know, like, even monogamous relationships go through dead bedroom periods or periods where they're not having as much sex as they'd like. That happens in polyamorous relationships too. Sometimes you could be dating five people and not having sex with any of them. Not always by choice, but because, you know, life happens and we get affected by other things other than just the number of people that we can have sex with. Other huge misconceptions. It's also all orgies and group sex. Again, also happens a lot, but there are some people who aren't into that. Maybe they just prefer to date separately, where just because you love multiple people or date multiple people, it doesn't mean you necessarily want to be involved in all the logistics that an orgy necessitates. So it's, again, really just much more varied than people think it is.
I wanted so that you could clarify this. Cheating can still happen in an E&M relationship. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like, I remember when I first started this journey and I have had partners cheat on me in the past. And then when I encountered polyamory, I was like, oh, now I will never be cheated on again. And like, that's a lie that we tell ourselves to feel better and more secure in our relationships. But the truth is that every relationship, even if you're like 100% committed, quote unquote, even if you're married to someone, which to most monogamous people is the ultimate expression of commitment, the final form of love and commitment, you can't really tell if that relationship is going to last forever. You can't really tell if that commitment is going to last forever. People cheat in married relationships all the time. So yes, in non-monogamous relationships, cheating can happen. Obviously, it's not always the same kind of cheating as in monogamous relationships, because in non-monogamy, ideally, you're talking about what cheating means to you. For example, if you say that, okay, you can sleep with other people, but you have to tell me first, or you have to tell me within the next 24 hours. And then let's say your partner has sex with someone else and they don't follow the agreements that you've set, then that's cheating. You know, the difference with this and monogamy is that in monogamy, the agreement is you just don't sleep with other people. But then we're also noticing now, like, there was this weird trend a few years ago or something where it was called micro cheating. And this was like really funny to me because it's like, oh, if you like other girls' pictures on Instagram, that's cheating, or that's micro cheating. Or if you have friends of the opposite sex, for heterosexual people, it's micro cheating. And I was just like, did anyone in this relationship actually talk about this? Because again, it seems that these are assumptions. Like, of course that's cheating. You know, you're in a monogamous relationship. Of course, it's the default. But then you realize that everyone has completely different understandings of what is cheating for them. There are some people, like, if you make out with your friend, it's not cheating. There are some people, if you even look at somebody else, to them, it's cheating. So it's just, we need to talk about these things. And in non-monogamy, you are talking about them. And in some ways, I feel like that's kind of worse. Because if you talk about it and you still go against it, it's like, oh no, you deliberately went against our agreements. versus like these micro cheating things, which could be completely accidental because you didn't talk about it. So yes, cheating can happen and it does hurt. Like, we're not saying that it doesn't suck to have someone betray your trust. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't suck less, you know, like everything still hurts. Mm-hmm. It's just that people who are non-monogamous hopefully are just more willing to talk about it. They're more willing to not paint the cheater immediately as the worst person to ever grace this earth with no redemption. Once a cheater, always a cheater. All these judgments that we place on cheaters. I think non-monogamous people, because we generally question why we feel certain ways about certain activities. Like, why do we feel so betrayed by certain things? And we're more willing to talk about it with the other person and hopefully make it through and repair the relationship rather than just, no, immediately cut off a cheater.
What would you say are some of the challenges being in an E&M relationship, specifically in the Philippines? We understand we're still pretty much a predominantly Catholic, very conservative country. What are some of the challenges that you faced? You could also share maybe some personal insight on this.
Well, there are a lot of challenges just being non-normative in this country. Like, I'm also queer. I also look very alternative. And a lot of the same challenges I experienced as a non-monogamous person were, I guess, I was primed and prepped for it by coming out as queer very, very young. So if anyone's been queer, they probably already heard the same things, like, you're an abomination, that's not what God wants, you're a slut, etc. All these things, that it's not godly, that we're going to go to hell. These are honestly just words. And at this point, it doesn't really affect me because it's just, it doesn't actually affect my life. But the challenges that do affect my life as a non-monogamous person, even just simply, like, I guess the microaggressions you get from people, especially me, since I'm very out, I'm very open. People know me as someone who's non-monogamous. So sometimes at parties, you know, you just want to enjoy and people are asking you, but how can you do that? Isn't it different? And I'm just like, let me just enjoy my drink. Yeah, like, you know, you don't see me like poking and prodding at you. Like, oh, why do you only want one person? Isn't that weird? Isn't it? I mean, I do turn it back on them when they do it to me. But again, minor inconveniences. Some of the bigger ones probably are just like, you get invited to a wedding. You don't really know who to invite.
It's plus one. All right. That's so true. I never thought of that.
Just like really the small ways in which the world is built. Or like, if you go on like a romantic something, all the packages are for two people. But I guess, like, minor stuff aside, being in a Catholic country, it's just how ingrained it is, even with people who aren't religious. Because I don't think a lot of people realize that our idea of romance as a one-to-one correspondence, you know, it's a marriage between a man and a woman kind of thing, is very religious in nature. It comes from just this idea that God wants us to do very specific things in our relationships, you know, no sex until after marriage, etc. All these things. Like, even if you're not religious, even if you've sworn off of it, like, I basically stopped identifying as a Catholic very, very young, but I still had all these mononormative ideas about romance and love. These are still tied into religion. And a lot of people don't realize that, which is very, very funny to me, because if you read the Bible, they had like hundreds of wives. In fact, we might be more biblical if practicing multiple partners, like, even the father of Judeo-Christian religions, Abraham, had like seven wives. I don't remember, but he had a lot. There's a whole song about it. And we study these things in school. And for some reason, it doesn't click to us. We still stick to that marriage is between a man and a woman. So I suppose just getting a lot of pushback is difficult because, again, even if I've been doing this for super long, even if I've tried to unlearn a lot of things, if you are living in a country where everyone says the sky is green and you look at it and you're like, no, it's blue. You know, it's kind of gaslighting. It causes you to doubt yourself because if mm-hmm. everyone around you, like, what are the chances everyone is wrong about mm-hmm. this, right? Like, I will admit, even to this day, I still have sometimes doubts just because mm-hmm. the majority of the people around me aren't mm-hmm. non-monogamous yeah. or there's very specific ways that they practice their relationship. So sometimes I'm like, is this possible? Like, is anything else possible? Because I don't see it. It's like being mm-hmm. a gay person in a straight community. Mm-hmm. You know, it becomes really, really easy to deny your true self or deny what is that you want because like you just can't really see the possibilities, like what it would look like even. You have no role models to look at. You have no one to ask for advice or for help because like the people who are older and have like successful relationships, they're all coming from a monogamous perspective. So because everyone around you is like this, and some of them are very aggressive about telling you that you're wrong, mm-hmm. it can cause doubts. I've had moments where I'm just like, you know what, maybe they'll just be monogamous. You know, it seems easier. Yeah. At least there's more of a script to follow. And then like maybe after about like a couple of hours of stressing, I eventually default back to know that that would actually be worse for me. You know, at least I'm very grateful that I'm able to mm-hmm. reset my compass. But I'm lucky to have a community that is yeah. a lot of non-monogamous people. You know, I've built this community over the last several years. My friends generally are operating in this sphere. So I have people to be like, no, stop it. You know, stop talking to yourself that way and like get back in touch with who you are. But if you don't have that, and most people don't, then it's very, very easy to just believe everyone else and think that there's something wrong with you and think that there's a very specific path to happiness and to salvation. Yeah. Again, that's also very religious, right? Mm-hmm. There's one path to this imagined heaven. And if we're talking about it in terms of what's happening here on earth, then there's one path to happiness is yeah. you find somebody, you get married, you have mm-hmm. kids, you die together. That's the mm-hmm. script. And then if you deviate anything from that, then you'll have a hard life. Or you'll suffer because this mm-hmm, isn't the mm-hmm. right way. Yeah. So the thing is like monogamous or not, I think most of us don't want to suffer. You know, most of us want to be happy in this life. And if everyone's telling you that this is the way to be happy and you have no other, again, role models or mm-hmm. things to look at to tell you that there's other ways, then you're going to do it even if it doesn't actually make you happy. Mm-hmm. And then there's also the added bit of this thing that Catholicism likes to do where it's like, you know, we suffer here on earth so that our lives after are better. So it's like, we're also glorifying suffering in some ways. We're glorifying martyrdom in some ways. So if mm-hmm. someone's unhappy, but they're doing it for godly reasons, then we applaud them. When it's like, instead we question, okay, but why did we have to force this yeah. very specific idea on this person mm-hmm. to make them unhappy, promising them some kind of reward in the future if they just do it right? It's also kind of gaslighting. It's like, oh, you're not enjoying yourself now, but you will enjoy yourself for eternity.
Oh, sure. Right?
So that's, we don't know that. Mm-hmm. Like, no one can truly say that. And also, like, why? We're just really glorifying making people deny themselves yes. and we're giving people a reason to justify their own suffering instead of giving them the tools to live a happy, pleasurable, satisfying life.
In line with that, I wanted to ask, do you foresee in the future E&M being more widely accepted or and even recognized as a valid form of loving? And what are the ways that we could gradually sort of break that stigma?
I would like to optimistically think that, mm-hmm. but realistically speaking, I wouldn't even think it's on the table until we can do something about the divorce bill.
Okay.
We can't even do that. So if we can't do that, like all these other things are a pipe dream, honestly. So for me, the first step, even before same-sex marriage, honestly, mm-hmm. is that we need divorce. Because if one of the main values in non-monogamy is autonomy, is choice. So we don't like trapping people in relationships just because they have A, some kind of weird obligation to us, or B, some kind of legal obligation to us, whether it's like emotional or legal. Like, ideally, you're not trapping people into certain relationships. Like, if you want to stop this relationship, then you have all the right to leave. So you can't say that we have the choice to have the relationships we want if we only have the choice to start them but not to end them.
Yes.
That's not a real choice. So that's probably the first policy that needs to be passed before we can even start talking about anything. Also, our adultery laws, our concubinage laws, which are extremely outdated, where if you're married, you can literally go to jail or have to pay a fine if you have affairs outside of it. It's like, why do we have this law? Why are we legislating private personal relationships? And ultimately, I think the biggest one for me is that we need to recognize that marriage gives a lot of privileges and rights to people, like that single
among
people
partners.
Don't have. Yes, among partners. So the right to make medical decisions, the right to inheritance. Insurance companies often won't let you put a partner unless you're married or if you're like civil unioned. So there's a lot of things. Oh, adoption. That's another one, right? Adopting children. There are certain social functions that can only be done if you're married. And this is why queer people find it so important to have same-sex marriage, because it's like there are certain rights we don't have because we can't get married. Now, I think that's actually like, okay, good point, but also let's take it further. Why are there rights for getting married? Why do we do this? Why? Because if you give special rights to a certain kind of relationship, even if you say, oh, all relationships are equal, no, but this one has more rights. Therefore, it's probably more valid in the state's eyes and in society's eyes, because, you know, culture also is revolving around like the policies that we have. So why do we give special rights to people who are married? Why can't we just allow everyone to choose who gets to make their legal decisions? Why can't we just? And the thing is, I guess in some ways these are allowable. Like, you can have medical, you can actually make legal documents assigning, I guess, anybody. But it's so much harder because when you're married, it's automatic.
Yes.
Right? There's like all this, but if you're not, there's all this red tape that you have to go through. You have to go
bureaucracy.
To the lawyer. You have to pay this. And that is basically also disadvantaging people, because I'm a lazy person. Like, there are a lot of things I won't do if it takes more than five steps. Like, getting married sounds easier than having to do all of these things. So
I think it might be. Like, I think it might be easier to get married. Yeah, just like
right?
that.
It's just there's less papers involved in getting married than it is the trying to assign somebody to take over my medical decision. So that's probably the question we need to be asking. Why are there any rights assigned to marriage? Like, if we say that marriage is all about love, right? You're supposed to marry someone that you love. This is why if you get married to a foreigner and you try to get a green card, they grill you so hard to be like, do you actually love each other? Are you in a real relationship? Are you in a real marriage? And it's not just for the green card. Well, then in that case, let's stop assigning rights to marriage so we can truly see if it's about love. Because there's also a lot of people who get married and stay in marriages because of the rights that are afforded to them. So then we need to stop lying to ourselves. Is it a practical thing? Is it a love thing? We can't say it's only love when we assign so much practicality and give it so much practicality. So my radical proposition is get rid of all of the rights to marriage so that people who want to get married can just get married out of the goodness of their own hearts, you know, and have everyone just have rights. Because it's, if you don't want to get married, if you can't get married right now because you're queer or something, or if you want to get married to multiple people, that's usually the big one, right?
Like, I wanted to bring that up.
So it's like the big question about getting married to multiple people is usually a practical question. How do we divide property? easy, stop making property, all right, of marriage. Then you can marry as many people as you want. And it won't be messy because then you can just have a will and then just do it the regular way, right?
Correct.
So I think that's probably, I think when queer people are like, we deserve the same rights as heterosexuals, I think that's just like the first part of the question. I think the next question is, wait a minute. Why is this particular relationship valued above all else? Mm-hmm.
I'm on my last question, actually, Drew. It's been so great talking to you. But my last question would be, if there was anything that you would want our listeners to take away about E&M, what would it be?
If there's one thing I want people to take away, actually, whether it's about non-monogamy or not, mm-hmm. like whatever yes. you personally identify as,
yes, please
like
do.
You get to... Like, you get to choose what your relationships look like. You get to decide what you do. Mm-hmm. There is a particular script that you can follow if you want, but that's just a script. That is one script of the billions of potential scripts mm-hmm. that it can have. So if there's one thing that people can learn from non-monogamy is that you have the agency and the power to decide how to conduct your relationships. The church can't tell you what to do. Mm-hmm. Your family can't tell you what to do. Rom-coms can't tell you what to do. Your friends can't tell you what to do. Because at the end of the day, it is you and mm-hmm. whoever else you're participating in these relationships with. It is your relationship. So ultimately, that power, that choice is for you. So really introspect, ask yourself, what do I want? Me as an individual, divorce it from everything that people have told you you should want in your relationships. Like, especially if you're feeling unsatisfied despite quote unquote having whatever it is you think you should have, ask yourself, is this really what I want? Is there something else I could want? Are there other things I can incorporate into my relationship or remove from my relationship that would make me happier and make my partner/partners happier? So that's really it. Decide for yourself.
The local non-monogamous community is not without its struggles, what with state laws and policies designed to cater to monogamous people. O'Bannon said that legalizing divorce will be an important step in making society more inclusive and progressive. This has been another episode of B-Side. Subscribe now and enjoy a new episode every week.